When you build the story becomes the strategy becomes the story, and the story becomes the strategy. And if you're the storyteller and the narrative designer, the one who's like putting it together, you are by default like really strategic to that. And you see it. So like you have these, you're jamming on the story in these like one-on-one meetings or whatever. And then all of a sudden, one of the things, like features you talked about that was important to the story is now prioritized in the Jira queue or whatever, you know? So like, I think that works. That's worked really, really well for me. I think there's other ways to do it, but that's how I've approached it.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Product Marketing Life Podcast, the show where we sit down with everyday product marketers to talk life, career, and most importantly, product marketing. My name is Colin Majak. I'm the lead PMM at Classy. And in this episode, I sat down with the king of narrative design, Marcus Andrews. Now, if you don't know Marcus, Marcus has had a really impressive product marketing career with spending about 5 years at HubSpot, and he's currently the director of PMM at Pendo. Now, this episode was a lot of fun. We dove into how narrative design can help you gain influence with your product team, how you can write narratives that your customers will actually resonate with, and how you know that your narrative is actually working. I really enjoyed this conversation with Marcus, and I think you will too. Enjoy the episode. Marcus, it's so good to finally meet you. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
It's good to be here, Colin. Likewise, thanks for having me.
I feel like you've been on my radar forever for a couple of reasons. One is I feel like you've written enough hot takes on the role of product marketing that have gotten traction on LinkedIn that like I just noticed you. Second is I feel like you've done a lot of work on narrative design, and I want to come back to that. But I think the last one that stands out is that you're one of the few product marketers I can think of who is regularly selling to or product marketing to other PMMs. Like I know Pendo has buyers, I imagine, in product and in CS and just kind of across the whole go-to-market team. But in my mind, product marketers would totally be a stakeholder in that purchase. I'm curious, do you feel like you enjoy the pressure of product marketing to other product marketers, or is that challenging? I think I would feel all sorts of, hey, don't judge my product marketing too hard.
I've always thought it was super easy or easier. Like I'm like, it's like, okay. I feel like I'm being lazy doing that because HubSpot was like that. I really like it. Like HubSpot was, I worked at HubSpot for a long time and I got to market to marketers and I'm like, this is easier than marketing to like medical device lawyers where I don't know anything, yeah. You know? So to me, it's like, oh, if I get to market to marketers, I have like a cheat code to the persona. And also like, you know, teams that you will need to build relationships with, like the product team, they're going to be like, oh, Marcus, you're a good marketer. And I'm trying to get inside the head of marketers. So like Pendo's the same way where it's like I'm marketing and product marketing to product marketers, and like product teams are our core persona, and especially PMs. But yes, product marketing teams are the core side of that. So like it's easier because I by default know the persona deeply. So I suppose you're right. There's some pressure there, but I like it.
I hadn't thought about the advantage. That totally makes sense because my PMM career, I've had a mix of audiences. Like some where I used to work in a church, and then one of my first PMM roles was selling to that market, basically to pastors. And I was like, I know their language backwards and forwards. That's easy. I also have sold to moving company owners, and I do not know that persona, and I had to learn that persona. And so I could see the pros and cons of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think any good PMM can sort of figure out an audience, and I've had to for sure before. I've done developer marketing and, marketing to like agencies and marketing to, some more technical personas and stuff like that. And you figure it out. But like, I think there's just some default advantages to marketing to personas that are like, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's people like, I think for the vertical SaaS, like churches and like SaaS companies, software companies that cater to that audience, it helps to have some like subject matter expertise. Cause I think like a good PMM is an SME in their space. And you got to learn that somehow. So I always look for a shortcut.
Yeah. Makes a ton of sense. You know, on that note of selling to the product team space, A big part of why I wanted to have you on is because a few weeks ago, you wrote a post that caught my eye that was very much on the relationship between product managers and product marketers, which,
right.
But you talked about how you often hear PMM say something to the extent of, I wish product would pull me in sooner, or I feel like product never tells me what's going on. And you went on to say something to the effect of, hey, if you're demanding that product pulls you in sooner, it's already too late. And that caught my eye alone. But what was more surprising is you went on to say that narrative design was the way to kind of curry the product team's favor and actually influence strategy. So I'll come back to that. But I want to zoom in on that first part. I have to imagine a lot of PMMs resonate with that sentiment of products over here, they're building the roadmap. I feel like I'm on the outsider just trying to clawing to get in. What makes you say that if you're wishing product would bring you in sooner, it's already too late?
Yeah. So let me say this, that like I've been there. I get it. It's hard. It's not easy, especially when the product team is building things and then you're hearing about it too late and you feel like you're not getting information or you don't have a seat at the table. I have been there. It is challenging. I have empathy for people in those situations. But I think a lot of folks want to solve it by saying, like, let's build some rules and some process that says the product team has to pull in product marketing really early. And if they don't do that, then they're in trouble with their boss or something. And I'm upset and I'm going to go tell my manager about this. And I'm going to say, like, they're not pulling me in early enough. And that sucks. Like, don't do it. Just don't do it, because it's not a solution, first of all. Like, it just is going to make the product team like resent you a little bit potentially, because now they have these rules about that they have to pull you in. It adds process and slows things down. It's not good. And probably maybe you need some process and it's like important, but maybe you're not providing enough value to them and they don't understand why they should pull you in early. And so they don't. And that's what I think the real like situation is. And I've been there before, so don't get mad at me if it's too true. I'm not trying to hurt anyone's feelings, but you have to provide value up front. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. Narrative design is how I do it, but that's probably why you're not getting pulled in, right? It's too late. Yeah. If you say, they're not pulling me in, this is an issue, we got to fix it with some process. And it's like, probably already too late.
Well, that's a really interesting way to nuance that. I think you're right. Cause I've been in orgs where, you know, I've worked with great product managers and I've worked with not so great product managers. I remember taking a role and sitting down with the director of product and who just didn't understand why I wanted to be in a roadmap meeting. But I agree with that sentiment that if you just demand like, oh, we're going to tweak our process and now it's required that you bring product marketing into this roadmap meeting, that won't probably fix your problem. Because like that's not going to change a product manager's impulse to say, oh, when we have an ideation session, or I'm going to pull like two other PMs together to talk about this problem. Their impulse isn't going to be, I want to bring product marketing in because I think they have something valuable to say. They're just going to kind of comply by the requirements that you've set for them, right?
Right. And yeah, it's unfortunate, but it is sort of the way it is in product marketing. You have to default to people not understand. The default should be no one's going to know what you do or how you're going to help them. Because if you're like that director of PM, right, like he hopefully knows what product marketing is and understands the value of it, but he might not. And it's very likely that he doesn't. And you should expect that. And it's your job to help them understand the value of product marketing. Like it's just how it is in product marketing. You're always kind of selling it. You're always helping teams understand the value of it. If that director of product management has a technical writer who's going to write all their knowledge-based documents for them, they get it, right? It's like, okay, I know what this person is going to do. I understand how I'm going to work with them. I need them. They need me. But if it's product marketing, they may have no idea. And you may have to go in there and sell them and convince them. And it's not my favorite part of the job, because just when you think you've made progress, you take a step back and like, but it's just sort of how it is. But I love being a product marketer. If you have chosen this profession and want to do it, you have to be okay with that. And you have to be ready to like sell the role, convince people of it. Sometimes like the same person multiple times, and like that's okay, you know, because if you do that well, you keep your job, you get promoted, you get more responsibility, you get, you know, you build better relationships with people. So it's just, but it's just an expectation I think people should go in with.
Yeah. I think that's a good observation just about the nature of product marketing, is that the role does need to be sold internally. I think you could move away from PMs and just look at sales. Like you're the new product marketer and you want sales to start using your messaging or thinking that what you have to say is trustworthy. And I found that the best way to curry the sales team's favor is to, in the first, I don't know, 90 days you're on a team, deliver them assets that they ask for. Like just, hey, they're like, oh, we need a new slide on pricing. Oh, got it, done. Just quickly showing them your value. And then they actually ask you for messaging. They actually ask you for insights on the product. I think that same principle is true across the board. You give something, they become convinced you're valuable, and then they start actually pulling you in.
Yeah. No, it's totally true. I think, with sales, it's the same thing. And you know, that post was about product, but I think you could, essentially write the same thing about sales, right? Like, I think everybody struggles with sales teams where you create something, they don't use it. And so it's probably already too late. If you made the thing and they're not using it, you can't build some process to like make them use it. They have to find it valuable. And usually to find it valuable, you got to do some discovery. You got to understand them. You got to build something that solves for their needs, or you have to help them understand why the approach you took is the best approach and sell them on product marketing a little bit and like get them to buy into your process. Cause, salespeople, I think with sales teams, especially, it can be really reactive where they're like, we need this thing in like 2 days and it's really important. And like, that's a hard way to work for a product marketer. If you're constantly just like getting those requests from sales, it helps to have some sort of process to manage them and meet, deliver them good stuff, but in a way that you can not have to just address fire drills all the time.
Yeah. Where I think your approach in building relationship with product differs is most time I'll hear people talk about, oh, PMM is the voice of the customer. So that's why I want PMM in. And they can expect that the PMM is going to bring some sort of market insight to the product team, or they're going to bring some sort of customer sentiment. And that's the way that PMM then can start unlock that ability to influence the roadmap or have a seat at the table. But I liked that your suggestion was doing that through narrative design. So I'm curious, one, can you just briefly define what you mean by narrative design? And then two, why narrative design when it comes to getting that influence on the product?
Yeah. If you think of, there's my narrative design process and the steps. We got some Chick-fil-A for lunch. Nice, Collins.
I did. See me sipping my Diet Lem.
I did. I'm jealous. I just got leftovers from my fridge. I wish Chick-fil-A would have been more fun. There's like my narrative design process, which has like steps and blah, blah, blah. And like there's a structure and a framework there. But then there's also sort of just like working on the story with your product team. And I think that's also narrative design, but it's like, it's at a higher level. And if you're a PM, so much of like you're trying to develop this strategy for your product, which is really hard. It usually includes like, we've identified a bunch of different problems and we have some solutions that we're going to build, and we have that in the form of a roadmap. You've got to go out and you've got to like sell that internally. You need to get marketing bought in and sales bought in and leadership bought into your roadmap and your vision. And the best product teams, the best PMs I've ever worked with are really good storytellers. They come in and they just have a crystal clear strategy. They know exactly the problem they're attacking. They have lots of evidence. In short, they have a really, really good story. It's hard though. I think, product managers have shifted from being really technical to being less technical and more business people, which has helped and is good. but still they're trying to take this, they're in the weeds of building the product. They're talking to customers, they're looking at NPS data and product usage data and like dealing with like leadership. And so when you use the PMM can kind of come in there and say, hey, let's turn your strategy into a story, something that's like really easy to communicate. You help them get tighter on the ICP. You help them position their products. You help them, build some messaging, like all the things that we do, but through the idea of like, we are going to jam on the story together. One, I think that helps. Like sometimes when you go to product teams and you're like, let's do positioning and build an ICP. They're like, what are those things? And you got to do a bunch of education. But I think if you come in and you say like, hey, I want to like, we're going to talk about the story of your product today. And, it just, everybody gets that. And then you can kind of come in and you can use your tools to jam on the story with them. And then what you're really doing is shaping the strategy. You're achieving that goal of what you were trying to do of being brought in early. Because when you build the story becomes the strategy becomes the story and the story becomes the strategy. And if you're the storyteller and the narrative designer, the one who's like putting it together, you are by default, like really strategic to that. And you see it. So like you have these, you're jamming on the story and these like one-on-one meetings or whatever. And then all of a sudden, one of the things like features you talked about that was important to the story is now prioritized in the Jira queue or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I think that works. That's worked really, really well for me. I think there's other ways to do it, but that's how I've approached it.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me. I'm wondering if almost the power of a narrative and all of that is, one, it brings this sense of cohesion to what is often a disparate array of feature requests. And if you can kind of tie a story around it, it brings in into a kind of a framework of like, these are the things that are actually worth focusing on. And I imagine my experience is that you make the PM's job a lot easier because so much of their job is selling with their leadership, with a dev team, with whoever's on like RevOps, that this is the right thing to actually build. And if you can make this sticky story that kind of pulls on the emotions a little bit, helps you empathize with the customer, it makes their job just way easier. Like they can kind of get this buy-in that a list of five features couldn't.
Totally. Yes. I think that's exactly right. And like, it's good. It's a good path forward for me because like, I know I think product marketing is like my idea of what product marketing is you basically take a creative marketer and you sort of just dunk them and marinate them in the product and then good things happen. But I know not everybody thinks that, right? So like, I'm more of a creative marketer, storyteller. Like that's where my strengths naturally lie. So that's why I take that approach. But yeah, I think all those good things have come out of that and happened in how I work with product. But it's hard.
Yeah. Now, on that note, my experience is that a lot of product teams think they have a story. They'll sit around, they'll come up with a user story that is just bone dry. It's like user A has a problem that when they do this, this happens. And it's painful. It has no teeth. It feels out of touch. It doesn't like have any emotional resonance or has this like hypothetical perfect user in mind. I'm curious then, because that's already sort of a practice, you'll see it even in a Jira ticket sometimes where they'll have this like two line sad user story. What do you think is missing in a lot of stories with product and product marketing teams that creates that sort of dry, out of touch story?
Yeah, I mean, I think the good thing is that like, yeah, this user story is like the default for how people think about like how do I help people understand this product? Or I'm going to write a user story. So they're already starting from a story, which is good, I think. Usually they're the elements of narrative design, I think, come into play then because like in my process, right, there's five steps. There's like, you know, there's been this undeniable change in the world. That change has had an impact on your audience. There's companies that are adapting. Why is that hard to do? And then how do you help And like structuring the story that way, sort of like just it's hard to go through that process and not have some sort of an interesting story that gets people excited about it. Because one, it starts with a big, scary, undeniable change in the world, which immediately perks people's attention up. And you're coming from the outside in versus the inside out. So you're talking about a change that has happened in the world of your user. Something like AI has redefined how enterprise businesses operate, right? Undeniable, happening right now. Everybody's talking about it. Yeah, okay. I'm in, I'm listening, right? And then if you do a really good job of understanding the impact that has had on your specific audience. So if you're what other legal tech, you could say that this has created like all of these changes to our audience. And so then you're really, and that sort of forces you to really do a good job of unpacking how a big change is affecting your specific audience. And like, you got to research that and you got to understand it. You got to understand, from a market perspective, from a user perspective, from like all these things that just go into building good products anyway. And then you can say, how are companies adapting? Which is like, you get to sort of, create something new. You're not creating a category. You can create a new game, but you're coming up with like a new approach to this change. And that's where you usually build something that's pretty differentiated. Because I think also with like those user stories, you can go and you can look around at the competitive landscape and you can be like, hold up, everybody's saying this exact same thing that we're going to say. That's probably bad, right? No one's going to care what we have.
Yes.
And then, why it's so hard is sort of like really getting in touch with like the challenges of adapting to this. Because usually when you say this, there's been a change, smart companies are adapting, it's had a big impact, smart companies are adapting to it. Most of the time people are like, oh yeah, I want to do that. I'm trying to do that. And you're like, yes, you are, but it's really hard. You got to pay this and do this and do this. And it just builds a lot of empathy with your audience. And then you introduce your solution. So there, I think you can lean on the framework. And once you've done it a bunch, it's relatively easy to like crank stuff out. Like you could be working on the story of a product, or like a blog post, or like a webinar, or like redefining your whole company's mission and focus. Like I've used it for all those things, and it works effectively at all different levels. So kind of forget what your initial question was, but that's I think where the framework will help out.
I think the initial question there was just what ends up being missing that creates these sort of dry stories that people aren't resonating with. And what I'm hearing through your framework, remind me, those first two steps were like, what's something that's like an undeniable change that's happened, and then the result the impact that change has had on your specific customer. It sounds like if you can have an accurate, insightful observation on those two, you've laid the foundation of a story that your customers are actually going to be interested in. Assuming you could close it with a differentiated product that actually speaks to the problem. Like if you lay out the problem, then your product doesn't solve it. But it seems like nailing those first two points is kind of how you get like that hook in your audience.
100%. Yeah. If you do those first two steps really well, you will capture attention and you will be able to tell a good story. Yeah. And it should tee up your solution really, really well. They have to be connected. You have to be able to deliver on whatever it is you say you're delivering. But yeah, I think those are and most companies just don't do that, right? Most companies do problem solution messaging with their marketing. So, I feel like the reference is not relevant anymore, but it's from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Charlie Kelly, like he comes up with a product called Kitten Mittens, where he puts mittens on a kitten. And he says, is your cat making too much noise? Which is not like cats, it's funny because cats don't make a lot of noise, but I think that's what most product marketing does. It's like, do you have this problem? And here's this problem. And like, it kind of works because it helps you understand what the company is, but it's super undifferentiated and I just easy to ignore and boring. But if you start with like, hey, there's been this big change in the world and it's having a really meaningful impact on companies like you, it feels more like you know, you're a helpful guide and you're identifying something that's real and meaningful. So yes, it's those first two steps are very important.
I'd be curious how, I imagine if you've done enough research on your customer, you kind of have an impulse on what those first two things would be. Like I'm in this right now where my company's trying to reach a new segment and I've kind of been charged with go to market for this new segment. And I'm kind of doing that same thing where I have like, here's the change that's happened in their world. I did it without knowing this framework. And then here's like how it's impacting you guys or this audience. But I don't know if that's actually going to land yet. Like I would be curious how you historically have gone about validating whether you've actually read the market and done it in a way that your audience is going to resonate with. Like how have you gone about validating that I nailed the problem and I nailed the impact so that I can actually speak to this audience?
Yeah. I mean, I think part of that is maybe that's why I like to work at companies that market to marketers or product marketers. Because I think you have to really keep your ear to the ground and be paying attention and be reading stuff and being involved and like know what the hell is going on. So that's part of it. I have definitely, and then I think it's usually just like, you know, the nice thing about a story is that it's very easy to get feedback on and then change, right? Like it's very expensive to launch a product and then get feedback on it and change the product, right? So like you can take a story that's not good or isn't there and you can get feedback internally. You can pressure test it with customers. You can build some slides and jump on a sales call and try it out. You can launch blog posts or you can post nonsense on LinkedIn and see if people like it. Yeah. All of those things I do. Like LinkedIn's really kind of good for it because like I will have narratives that I'll just like, I feel 75% about this. I'm going to test it out. And, you know, sometimes they get a really big response. Sometimes they don't get a response at all. And it's like, okay, that's a good feedback point. So I think you just got to try to test it out. Usually it's internally you will get the response you're looking for. And sometimes it's like you develop the one of the, like usually like there's just not a lot of feedback on good stories I've found. It's not like anyone will say like, wow, this is the best story, Marcus. Good job. It's like, usually they'll say like, it won't say much. They'll be like, yep, get it. Okay. Yeah, no, that's cool.
It's not the feedback I was looking for, sales. I wanted you to tell me how this story was beautiful.
Right. You know, no one's going to say that, but that's okay. You have thick skin in product marketing, but yeah, you know, you'll hear it from usually from like, you know, you're pitching stuff to executives or, you know, sales leadership or product leadership or marketing leadership. Like if something's confusing or off or not resonating, they're going to give you that feedback, which is good. So yeah, I think that's, but it's, I will also say there's no one is going to, say, hey, you did it. You built the perfect, story and messaging. Everything's sort of a leap of faith when you get it out there, it's hopefully going to work. But, there's a million ways to do it. So you just kind of got to feel good about it and go for it.
Yeah. I'd be curious what you think the shelf life is on a good narrative. And the reason I think that is if your framework starts with that, here's this change that's in the world. Obviously, if you're talking about that early, you get to position your company as a thought leader. You're some of the first people talking about this big change. That's awesome. But my observation is that every major change in any given market starts off where maybe one or two people are talking about it. And then it gets to a point of almost being passe where everyone's talking about this change and they're all anchoring their story around this change where it's gotten to the point where your customer is like, yeah, I know, we know that changed. We're all used to it. Like it's already, so I'd be curious like how you're thinking about the kind of shelf life of a story and when it's time to say, hey, it's time for a new narrative.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the cycle, 100%. Usually someone will come out with a new game or a new way of thinking or some new ideas. The rest of the market will copy it and then it won't be interesting anymore. So I think you should just be sort of paranoid about that as a, you know, a narrative designer, as a product marketer. Like, you don't want to, and I do that naturally. I don't like, you know, going, if I see a long line of people, I like to go the other way because I don't like, I'm not, you know, it's like, you want to zig when they zag, right? Whatever. So I think that you have to build a good sense for that. But it's hard. I don't think there's a rule of thumb necessarily. Like when I worked at HubSpot, you know, they came up with a strategic narrative called inbound marketing. It was sort of like they put a name on and created a new game around like this new type of marketing that was emerging. And they did it in like, 2009 or something. And, they don't really talk about it as much anymore, but I mean, it worked for them for a solid, 15 years, you know? But I also developed a narrative there called the Flywheel, which we used to launch like our service hub. And at the time it felt really new and cool. And then probably at least, you know, a couple of years later, it did not feel as cool. Everyone was talking about flywheels and, you know, this motion that can like the self-propelling motion you get. And so I think like probably the right time to start thinking about, you know, some sort of new narrative and story is like after you've created the one that you feel good about. Launch it, you know, like push on it for a quarter as is. And then the one thing you can do is like consistency is really good. You don't want to like come up with a new, you have a, let's say you're a PM, you're working with a director of product. You come up with a really good story for your product line. You don't want to change it dramatically every quarter, but I do think you want to layer in, you want to layer in new ideas and like, hey, the change has shifted a little bit, or like these like companies are starting to adapt in a new way, or like there's this new challenge that's come out of somewhere. You can also layer in elements of storytelling. Like, you know, you can name an enemy and say like one thing we're doing at Pendo right now is I didn't come up with it, but I love it. I think it's a really good idea. We have our a product called Listen, which is like a customer feedback solution. And the current manual process right now relies on this, what product teams do is called triaging. And it's this very manual process that we get to eliminate with AI. So we're making triaging really this enemy that you should eliminate and fight at all costs. Yeah. And it's ruining your business and it's dragging down your PMs and they hate it. And it's like, you know, so you can do things like that. And there's lots of, I feel like I probably can't remember them all, but like there's a lot of different storytelling techniques that you can layer in like that, and make it new and make it fresh without abandoning the core story and keeping it relevant. But you then at some point, maybe you do introduce like at HubSpot, I'll shut up about this in a second, but at HubSpot, one thing that was in the original, in the inbound marketing, story, like the funnel was core to that story, the marketing funnel.
Yeah.
Tofu, mofu, and bofu. It was like, they had this own language. It was like, oh, it's all this religion around like this story, right? And, but it is. And, marketing religion, I guess. But, what we did to introduce Service Hub was we killed the funnel and we retired it. We didn't want to say kill. So we retired the funnel and we replaced it with the flywheel. And so we like, which felt dramatic, you know, like, oh, we're taking this thing that you knew and loved that we created. And we're saying like, honestly, it's past its prime. It needs to be replaced. And here comes this new thing. And so that was a way of sort of keeping it fresh and doing something that like didn't eliminate the existing larger narrative, but created this like new device that people could use to do their jobs. That's like, and that's always a good idea. Like, I feel like sometimes people get uptight about like, killing off a piece of the story or something that's like worked in the past. That's really key. But when you do it, people are going to pay attention because they're like, what? Like HubSpot's going to kill the marketing funnel and replace it with the flywheel. It just felt, big and important.
No, that's super helpful to think about. You're using that language of adding new layers. And that's a helpful way to think about it. Cause I think when you were talking about trying to maintain this fresh story, and as soon as you finish one, you start another, my mind was going to like, oh God, my team is so slow at adapting new stories. Like that sounds like a headache. just because of how long it takes just to build like a new standardized sales deck, like that stuff. And your team, bigger your team gets, the slower they tend to get. But I think that way of, it seems like the main enemy here is staleness. You lose, like your story becomes stale, it becomes passe, and continue to identify these new narratives that you can layer in, or these different undertones. Occasionally, yeah, there's one big change. You got to scrap the whole thing, I imagine. But thinking about these different layers you can put in there to continue to kind of re-inject life into the story, that's super helpful to think about.
Yeah. I think that's the right way to do it. Right. You don't want it to become stale or passe. You want to keep it fresh. You want to keep it interesting. And I mean, the good thing and the easy thing is like the world is constantly changing. If you keep your eyes open and are paying attention to stuff, there is no lack of change in the world at large, regardless of whatever industry you work in, but especially in tech, there's always something new. And there's a first mover advantage, and they are always looking for the new thing and care about the new thing and want to talk about the new thing. So, you know, you don't want to get too far out in front of your skis. You don't want to be like, just jumping at stuff that, you think is interesting. Like, you know, I've seen lots of marketing teams do this, but at HubSpot, this is a problem of ours too, I think, is like there would be something that would come along, this shiny object, and the marketing team would be like, let's talk about that. And I think as a product marketer, you got to be like, all right, cool, but our product cannot do that and is not going to do that. And that's not on our roadmap. And we're not, nobody cares about that. So like, you don't want to do that either. You don't want to be like just chasing the new thing. It has to work for your product vision and sort of your core audience and, you know, be true to the business, I guess. So that's a balance too.
Yeah. I think that's where it makes sense that a product marketer is at the center of the story, because you have to, I mean, we were talking earlier how like in terms of building a story that actually resonates with your audience, you have to nail those first two points around kind of the change and how it's impacting. But if you actually want to translate that connection to the story into pipeline or into actual close one customers, the product marketer's role of actually connecting that problem and change in the market to like what your product is actually capable of, and of what, like, can you actually, don't just write checks with a narrative out here that your product can't cash and that your product can't actually speak to or edit. That's super helpful. To close, I want to end kind of on a practical note. I'm imagining that PMMs, including myself, are going to hear this and be inspired and run with it and want to like write a new narrative. And I'm just imagining like this eager PMM, definitely not me, but maybe someone else out there. They design this narrative, they get it out to their sales team, they get it even in the market. Maybe they're a small enough org where they can ship it fast. What are some of the early signs? You mentioned earlier, like internal validation is helpful, but I would be curious, like a little further down the line, that what are some of the early signs you would look for to know that narrative is in fact working?
Yeah.
And not just drawing attention, but actually helping drive pipeline revenue.
Yeah. So one funny thing that will happen if you've nailed it is that people will come out of the woodwork saying that they've already been doing this, right? Like, because this happened with narrative design. Like narrative design, I built using narrative design. Like narrative design is a construction I created. It's not like, it's a term that exists in like video game creation, but narrative design for business, I just came up with to name this new game, right? So, and when I did, I heard from a lot of people, they would message me on LinkedIn or they would respond to stuff and they would say like, I've been doing a version of this and it's so cool that you put a name on this and brought structure to it, because I've been like, and even you said it earlier in the thing, you're like, I kind of been doing that, right? Because like, and that's a sign of validation. It just means that you're onto something. Sometimes people will say it like cynically, where they'll be like, oh yeah, that's like, I've done that, it's new. But really, like, you're creating structure around this thing that people, like, you nailed the problem, because like, yes, there's been this change. People are trying to adapt. They're trying to play this new game. You just put a name on it and you created something. And so that's a great sign of validation. If people are like, mostly if people are like, huh? Like what? And they're scratching their heads and they're like, and you feel like you're having to really explain it to people and they just don't get it, you're off. You gotta think of something better. But if you've done something that's really good, that funny thing will happen where they're just like, yes, this makes sense. That happened with inbound marketing, where everybody was like, because it was like people were trying to do blogging and social media and SEO, but there was no way to describe the whole thing and systematize it. So like, you know, HubSpot came out with inbound marketing and everybody's like, yeah, okay. Yeah, no, this is the thing that we've been doing. Now it has a name and we can talk about it. So that's one. And then like tactically too, like this stuff will just outperform other like marketing. Like whenever I do, you know, I've seen a bunch of it, but whether it's like a blog post or a webinar or a product launch, when it has a strong narrative that's been done well and use the narrative design framework, they just do better. And they outperform other ways of approaching it.
Yeah.
And I think teams also work a lot faster, because I think there's sort of a blank page problem with product marketing, where it's like, okay, we got to come up with this webinar and this like blog post and then a launch plan. Like, where do we start? And if you know that, hey, I always just start with narrative design, then you just get into the Google Doc and you start writing stuff, you know? So you move faster. And if you educate teams internally about your process and how you approach things, the product teams are like, oh, cool. You got a process that you invented that is like works, like, great. Tell me about it. And we'll just do that. So they're bought in. And then the things just perform better. You know, it's like you can be more consistent with the message, and like the webinar will have more attendees and people will stay longer and the blog post will get more readership. So like all that is the validation I think you're looking for.
Yeah. No, that's super helpful. There's particularly that idea of having customers or your audience say, oh, you put language to what I've been doing, or put language to what I've been feeling. And it doesn't feel like persuasion as much as like, oh, someone named it. Right. And if you can hit that being like a really clear identifier, you've tapped into something good. That's super helpful.
Yeah. Like on the sales call, you just like, people are nodding their heads, you know, like that's another way. It's like, oh yeah. Yeah. No, no, you're right. That's it. Yep. Uh-huh. You know, like that's the good stuff. So like, and it's hard, but you know, sometimes either people will have something that's really basic and kind of boring and not differentiated, or they'll have something that's like confusing and hard to understand. And I'll be like, people don't get it. So yeah, you want something in the, I guess, in the middle there, but really, yeah, you just want people to, you know, get it quickly.
Yeah. Well, Marcus, I feel like we could dive into, do a full masterclass on narrative design here, but this was really fun. So thank you for coming on and doing this. If someone wants to keep up with you and kind of what you're up to at Pendo, what's the best way they can do that?
Yeah. So there is a masterclass on it. I created with the Product Marketing Alliance friends. I did I created the very first masterclass was the narrative design masterclass. And we just did an update on it. Alice, helped me. I filmed an update to the masterclass.
Perfect.
Like a month ago. And so we added new chapters on AI, which everybody wanted to understand, layering in new stuff, right? Uh-huh. So how do you use AI as part of your narrative design process? Another big thing people wanted help on is like, cool, Marcus, I like the idea. I'm bought in. How do I sell it internally and get people to like buy into it and adopt it? So there's a chapter on that. There's a chapter of using narrative design at like bigger, more enterprise companies. So that's all new. And that's, we're going to roll it out. I think it's coming out. I don't know when this podcast will air, but I know like in the next couple of weeks, we're going to make the update to the masterclass. So I'll post that. But, cool. Yeah, if people want to, LinkedIn's just the best place for me. I have like creator mode on. So I think it defaults to, follow, but people are more than welcome to connect with me, and I'll just, and especially anyone who's a PMM, I always connect with, and I love to get messages and, you know, hear from people and just talk. So,
cool. Well, I love it. Can't wait to watch the updated masterclass. That's going to be good.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right. Thanks again, Marcus.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again, and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.